Welcome to S&C Critical Insights. I'm Tracy Rochelle. Hi, I'm a partner in S&C's litigation group, and I'm a member of the firm's labor and employment law group and criminal defense and investigations practice.
And I'm Annie Ostrager, also a partner in the firm's litigation group, and I am a co-chair of the firm's labor and employment group and also a member of the criminal defense and investigations practice. Today, we're going to talk about the use of mandatory arbitration agreements and the ramifications of the Me Too movement on the use of such agreements. Although now coming under some criticism, the use of mandatory arbitration agreements is on the rise and has been consistently endorsed by the Supreme Court. In many ways, the Supreme Court's decision in Circuit City Stores versus Adams, which is a 2001 decision, paved the way for the widespread use of arbitration agreements as part of employee contracts. There, the plaintiff, who was an employee at Circuit City, alleged that he was being harassed on the basis of his sexual orientation. He had signed an agreement to resolve all disputes with Circuit City through arbitration, but he then argued that the Federal Arbitration Act, or the FAA, had a provision excluding employment contracts such that his agreement shouldn't have any effect. The trial court and the Ninth Circuit agreed, but in a 5-4 decision written by Justice Kennedy, the Supreme Court overturned the lower court decision and interpreted the FAA to allow mandatory arbitration in most employment contracts. Since then, a wave of decisions have come down upholding the enforceability of arbitration agreements, most recently in Epic Systems. Today, more than half of non-unionized private sector employers use mandatory arbitration agreements in some form or another.
The widespread use of mandatory arbitration agreements has come into focus in the wake of the Me Too movement, and we have seen a lot of reporting on plaintiffs' counsel making efforts to fight the enforceability of these agreements in the context of sexual harassment. Many prominent figures, including former Fox News host Gretchen Carlson in particular, have come out against the use of mandatory arbitration agreements, finding that they have the effect of silencing victims of harassment. Over the course of the past year, tech giants including Microsoft, Uber, Lyft, Google, and Facebook have all pledged to exclude sexual harassment claims from their mandatory arbitration agreements. Public focus on the issue seems to have encouraged some of these decisions. For example, Google's announcement came after a worldwide walkout of over 20,000 employees on November 1, 2018, in protest of how sexual harassment allegations had been handled at the company in the past. Facebook then followed suit.
That's right, Tracy, and legislative bodies at both the state and federal level have also been spurred into action by the spotlight on sexual harassment in the workplace.
For example, the tax reform bill signed into law this past summer contained a provision that provides the following. If a company settles a sexual harassment claim that contains a non-disclosure provision, the company is then not eligible to deduct the settlement amount for tax purposes. In December of last year, Senators Lindsey Graham, a Republican from South Carolina, and Kirsten Gillibrand, a Democrat from New York, introduced the Ending Forced Arbitration of Sexual Harassment Act, which has received support from all 56 United States Attorneys General. In March of 2018, Democratic Senator from Connecticut, Richard Blumenthal, introduced the Arbitration Fairness Act. In the week leading up to the midterm elections, Democrats in the House of Representatives introduced the Restoring Justice for Workers Act, which would ban businesses from requiring workers to sign arbitration clauses and from retaliating against anyone who chose not to sign one. It also would prohibit employers from banning class action suits. In fiscal year 2018, the EEOC filed 66 harassment lawsuits, 41 of which included allegations of sexual harassment. This is more than a 50% increase in suits challenging sexual harassment over fiscal year 2017. And this past year, the EEOC recovered almost $70 million on behalf of sexual harassment victims, up from $47.5 million in fiscal year 2017.
On the state side, states including New York have started enacting their own measures that are relevant to the use of mandatory arbitration agreements. In April of last year, the state budget signed into law by Governor Cuomo banned agreements requiring arbitration of sexual harassment claims. This bill, which has been in effect since last July, added Section 7515 to the New York Civil Procedure Law and Rules, which provides that no written contract shall contain any clause or provision requiring that the parties submit to mandatory arbitration to resolve any allegation or claim of an unlawful discriminatory practice of sexual harassment. Any such clause would be considered null and void, except where inconsistent with federal law. The ban doesn't affect the enforceability of agreements to arbitrate other claims, such as racial discrimination, for example. There is some question, Tracy, I think, whether this would be preempted by federal law, especially given that carve-out language. So the import of that language remains to be determined.
Exactly right.
But the bill also adds Section 5-336 to the New York General Obligations Law and Section 5003B to the CPLR to provide that in actions involving sexual harassment, no settlement resolving a legal claim may include a confidentiality provision unless that provision is the claimant's preference and such a preference is provided in a written agreement. So that could have a significant impact on the way these agreements are generally drafted and agreed upon in the arbitration context.
Agreed. The FAA favors arbitration and makes written agreements to arbitrate valid, irrevocable, and enforceable, save upon such grounds as exist at law or in equity for the revocation of any contract. The Supreme Court said in AT&T Mobility versus Concepcion, when state law prohibits outright the arbitration of a particular type of claim, the analysis is straightforward. The conflicting rule is displaced by the FAA. In Marmot Healthcare Center versus Brown, 2012 Supreme Court holding, they held that West Virginia's ban on pre-dispute agreements to arbitrate personal injury or wrongful death claims against nursing homes constituted a categorical rule prohibiting arbitration of a particular type of claim. As a result, the West Virginia rule was contrary to the terms and coverage of the FAA and therefore preempted and unenforceable. For the same reason, the New York Supreme Court, appellate term, held that the FAA preempted a state statute prohibiting mandatory arbitration clauses in consumer contracts. Under New York General Business Law Section 399-C, no written contract for the sale or purchase of consumer goods, to which a consumer is a party, shall contain a mandatory arbitration clause. Because this section of the general business law was a categorical rule prohibiting mandatory arbitration clauses in consumer contracts, the Supreme Court felt that it was preempted by the FAA. Thus, if challenged, Section 7515 will likely have little, if any, impact on the status quo until Congress decides to amend the FAA. So, the Supreme Court said in AT&T Mobility versus Concepcion, which was a 2011 holding, when state law prohibits outright the arbitration of a particular type of claim, the analysis is straightforward. The conflicting rule is displaced by the FAA.
So I think what this tells us is, notwithstanding the focus on the use of mandatory arbitration agreements in the media, even in congressional testimony and at the legislative level in both, you know, state and federal governments, the trend, the almost consistent trend, is in favor of the enforcement of arbitration agreements. Recently in Epic Systems, which we referenced earlier, the court held that Congress has instructed that arbitration agreements must be enforced as written, and that the FAA specifically directs courts to respect and enforce the party's chosen arbitration procedures. In fact, the Supreme Court has construed the FAA 56 times since its enactment in 1925, and except for 8 cases involving, you know, sort of secondary questions of federal jurisdiction, agency action, or other specific types of agreements, the court has consistently ruled in favor of enforcing agreements to arbitrate. Arbitration agreements have some real benefits for employers and also for employees subject to those agreements. Arbitration to resolve employment-related claims can actually work in a complainant's favor. It's often significantly simpler, faster, and cheaper than litigation, and people raising claims of, you know, sexual harassment or otherwise may be encouraged to go forward with the proceeding because of assurances of confidentiality that cannot be put in place with a public litigation.
Annie, the changes in state law and company policy that we've talked about today may be jumping the gun a bit, though. A carve-out only for sexual harassment, with racial discrimination and harassment, as well as other types of torts still going to arbitration, could lead to confusion and more litigation.
That's absolutely correct, Tracy. And mandatory arbitration agreements do not prohibit an employee from filing a complaint with the EEOC.
As we've discussed, the legal landscape signals that employers are on strong ground in seeking to enforce arbitration agreements, but employers need to consider the extra legal landscape as well.
Thank you for listening. For more information about our practice, please visit us on the web at www.sulcrom.com.